Welcome back to the Broadway Block. Tough loss to the Habs in Montreal. What did you like about that game? Also, we had Brennan Othman's debut against the Blackhawks. That was great to see. Actually, a first-round pick, like, you know, I kind of feel like we developed him a little bit and see him actually have a good debut. That was good to see. And in the Habs game, I felt like that was the first game Quick kind of looked bad in. I don't feel like we put that bad of a game up in front of him. You know, some of those were a little softies, but that was my opinion.
Well, obviously coming back is refreshing. You know, down 3-0, a lot of people turn the TV off. I felt like the team rallied back and we get a point that we probably shouldn't have. It stinks to just let the game kind of slip away from you like that, especially to a team like Montreal that, you know, on paper, I'm sure no one really had them beating us that day. So, I mean, you mentioned Othman making his debut. He didn't look so strong in the Habs game and he had some pretty limited ice time, but I did like his debut against the Blackhawks. I felt like he looked pretty comfortable, and something about just the way he was kind of just driving play and trying to make things happen. He was shooting the puck a lot, which is, if you look at his game, his scouting report, that's all stuff that we kind of knew about him. And to your point about developing him, I mean, it is in our best interest to kind of take some time with, you know, guys like him, Gabe Perreault, Brennan Othman. They do need some time before they get to this level. But I think the injury to Pitlick provides us this kind of small window to just see what he has without putting all that pressure on him. Obviously, we're going to need supplementary scoring. I mean, if you look at our depth scoring right now, it's pretty atrocious. I think we're like third to last in the league as far as depth scoring is considered. And Othman honestly wouldn't, you know, get that role immediately in the top six, the way that it looks right now with Kako starting to become healthy soon. I just feel like it's a perfect opportunity down the road to get that, you know, supplementary scoring on an entry-level contract where there's not really that pressure for him to develop into that first-round pick, like you said, but he's obviously has all that potential in more of like a sheltered window.
You mentioned Kako there. I saw that he was actually like a full skate participant this morning. So that's great to see. We really kind of do need him back in the lineup. Also been seeing, you know, we're at that point in the season, almost halfway through, where we have a lot of rumor birds going out and I keep seeing his name popping up. Do you think he comes back and, you know, maybe he's on the trade block, or do you think that he just comes back and does his thing?
If you look at the difference in the team, the way that we played a much more defensively structured game when he was in the lineup, I feel like he is a very integral part. And I know that right now it's one of those seasons where we're really expecting the point totals out of Kako. And for the last few years, all we've said are like, you know, off the scoreboard type of compliments for him. If you look at the way that he defensively impacts the game, though, I don't think there's much of an argument to the point that this team is, you know, they're a lot better with him in the lineup. So for sure, he's going to hit the ground and, you know, get that ice time. I hope that he goes back to that top line, because the Wheeler thing is, you know, in my opinion, kind of ran its course, which also could, you know, provide Wheeler another opportunity to actually be a benefit to this team, because it's really not going great for him this season.
I don't think it's been going terrible the last few weeks, but no, it hasn't been going great.
No, but if you watch him off the puck, I mean, he's still super, super slow. And I try not to get too distracted by points in some aspects, but we do need you to produce, and you're playing with Kreider and Mika. Not that we would score more than a goal a year. I still feel like those guys would set us up for an easy little tap in.
And Chris, you know, Kreider's been a fucking meat wagon all season.
The point is, you know, I think Kako stays on that top line when he comes back. They might kind of nurse him into it a little bit, but I would expect for him to, you know, maintain that full-time role. And I wouldn't see us moving on from him unless it meant, you know, something that helps us right now. That's like a surefire piece, but he doesn't really make a lot. So it doesn't really, you know, clear out too much room.
It doesn't affect us too much in the grand scheme. And it's like, we can cut ties after this year.
Well, let me ask you this. Cause you know, James Dolan, obviously owning both franchises here, you know, the Knicks shed RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley for what a lot of people think is a lackluster return. A lot of people are also kind of saying that it's addition by subtraction, and that, you know, these guys weren't going to get either the minutes or the money or whatever it is. Do you think that when you trade a guy like RJ, that it kind of gives a green light to the organization from ownership that we're fine with moving on from these top picks as long as it means getting back something that's going to help the team now?
Well, it's really interesting because their situation, it'd be kind of like if we were trading Kakko. Kakko would be the RJ Barrett in this situation. And then it's more upsetting that we would piece like a Braden Schneider with it, because it'd be like, that's how Emmanuel Quickly would be, like, in the sense that he has a lot of upside. Even, you know, obviously a lot was expected out of RJ Barrett, similarly to Kaapo Kakko, but in the sense they haven't lived up to that expectations, but it's more the other guy that you feel in a trade like that, that is the piece that gets the other team to give you back, you know, somewhat what the Knicks received. So it would be like, we would have to give it to a team that we were, that obviously knows their season's almost over. And there's like, you know, obviously everybody in the Metropolitan still thinks they got a shot, but you would have to look at other teams that would be, you know, ready to sell at that time. And the NHL is a lot different. Also, like, you know, we're a much more stable franchise than the Knicks per se has been. So it'd be more shaking to do that to the Rangers as opposed to the Knicks, who have been like, the Rangers can get the free agents that they want to come to New York. The Knicks cannot. So they're kind of also at a disadvantage of, like, you know, they have to make the trades that the people are willing to make and get the players that are actually willing to play there.
Yeah. And if you look around the league, there's not a whole lot of guys that jump off the page that would fit in our cap situation that you would be okay with trading. And, you know, Florida is going to make the playoffs, but somebody like a Sam Reinhardt that is due to make so much money next season, where they might be in a position to pawn him off if it meant, you know, you're losing a UFA to gain a top prospect. I don't think that that trade will get done, but you would be correct in assuming, I think, that you'd have to look outside the Metro for a trade partner. There's obviously very few trades that get done in the Metropolitan, especially come deadline time, where another team is not outside of the playoff picture. Because, you know, if you're talking about trading with the Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, maybe that can get done. But yeah, I don't see anything from the six teams or so that are in the top race, which has gotten tighter since we've last spoke about it. Actually, if you look back to December, the Metropolitan has essentially all picked up their game in the last month and been on a pretty even course. But it kind of goes to show you how getting off to a good start this year really helped us, because right now we would probably be behind both the Canes and the Devils if they were just off to a great start like we were this season.
I'm going to give you a fantasy trade scenario, because currently the Minnesota Wild are sitting pretty low in the Central Division with only 38 points. I'm going to give you a dream Rangers trade scenario. You trade Kaapo Kakko for Matt Zuccarello, who's been battling injury all season. He's been the same Zuccarello that we've always known, still, when he's in there, still lighting it up. So you trade Matt Zuccarello, Kaapo Kakko, and I'll say what I said before, Braden Schneider.
No, I don't think you trade Kakko and Schneider for Zuccarello. I think you could trade Wheeler and beef up the rest of it in some aspect with, you know, maybe somebody who's in the pipeline that won't get a shot. Maybe Jones, maybe a pick, because, you know, if you're Minnesota, I think it makes sense. I feel like right now we don't make that move short-sightedly for a guy that we've moved on from. Granted, the front office is different from the front office that moved on from Zuccarello. I actually posted on Twitter today and Instagram about, you know, Bar Down, I think, posted a, you know, who was the saddest NHL trade for you to see go. And it's like, Zuccarello, man, he pulls on those heartstrings, and it stinks, because I can see an argument for Zuccarello to have been probably one of the most integral pieces to that core. You know, you look back at the year that he goes out from hitting a puck to the head, and that team really desperately needed him then. And just the way that he was such a locker room presence, and through this rebuild, these last 4 years, I mean, Zuc is a guy that he could have really just stayed, and it wouldn't have shooken anything up. And it's unfortunate, because you can't undo it. And hindsight's 2020. We now know that watching him play with a guy like Kirill Kaprizov, I think he could play with Artemi pretty well. Mind you, there's probably going to be a few rushes where they both go down and pass it across the ice nine times. But as far as the way that he would fit into this team with all the high octane talent, I mean,
and does that Chris Kreider, Mika Zibanejad best friendship happen if Zook's still there to continue on as a, you know, one of the people left behind from the rebuild?
Well, if you're going to look at their little relationship and, you know, throwing a guy like Trocheck or somebody who, even on a second line, not playing with those two dudes, still kind of wedged his way into that. The chemistry is obviously there. And I just feel like, you know, talk about a guy that would complement Zuccarello's play style as well, you know? And it's just odd to me that that move ever happened. I think we all knew it, obviously, with the state of affairs then. But that one, to me, I think that hurts more than a guy that we're going to see tonight in JT Miller, who was, you know, no secret to you, one of my favorite players.
And let me tell you, JT Miller has just been lights out this season. He just had the last game he played against the Devs Saturday night, 2 goals. Is it a give me? Is that on there for a goal scorer tonight?
I have him on shots because I do feel like he's playing in MSG tonight. I feel like Miller's going to shoot the puck nonstop. So if you want my prediction, there's that. It's hard when you're betting based off of those things because, you know, you take the other night, for example, Colin Blackwell hasn't scored all season. Former Ranger, and what does he do? He does the exact thing that everyone knew was going to happen. And then, you know, we'll play against a guy like Miller who has scored against us. This isn't his first game against us. I thought about it the other day when Rod Brind'Amour beat Peter Laviolette, right? Peter Laviolette was the coach to Rod Brind'Amour, was the captain for the Hurricanes back when they won the Cup in 06. And, you know, for Rod Brind'Amour to beat Peter Laviolette as a coach, I mean, that has to mean a lot. But then I thought about it. That's not the first time. It's happened probably quite a bit. I mean, he's a good coach. It's not a moment that he needs right now in his career. It's one of those things that just sort of happened. But we, the fans, kind of put a little bit more faith and a little bit more stock into it. I guess coming full circle, it's like, how special is it for JT the seventh time he's coming to play MSG or whatever it might be? I don't know.
It's not like my New York Jets who, you know, have lost 15 straight to the Patriots and finally snapped it, which looks like it could be Bill Belichick's last game.
That's a bittersweet, though, when you miss out on potentially a higher draft pick.
But I heard the players, you know, like there are some things to be said about it because, you know, like, yeah, if there is a new coach in New England, like that's a new era. Like, you know, you beat that team. It doesn't feel like you beat the big bad Giants. Like, you know, like remember when the Capitals finally was able to get through the Penguins to be able to go to the Stanley Cup?
I'll give you a better one. Remember when Horace Grant was screaming, "That's not Michael Jordan," because Michael Jordan wore number 23. And there's something about, you know, mentally, it is Michael Jordan, obviously, but there's something about this era of invincibility is no longer there. And you're right. When you shed that cloak of we beat this team, Belichick's done. That puts a stamp in that book. That was history. That's time over. And now a new coach. What if the Jets are 2-0 against the Patriots next year?
It doesn't matter. It's not like you beat the big bad Patriots.
Well, no, it matters for the team going into the arena. Like, we're not scared of this team anymore.
Oh, yeah. Going forward like that. Another NFL point, you know, with the Saints and the Falcons game, it got a little heated there. You know, instead of doing the victory formation, they ran it in, you know, guy hadn't gotten a touchdown all year. They wanted him to. That would never happen in hockey where another coach would be mad the score was run up, right? Because how much could the score possibly be run up in a professional NHL game?
You know, I've seen this topic bounce around online a little bit over the last few days. And running up the score, I just feel like is such a little league rule. And I don't feel like it's fair to compare professional sports to things that we learned as kids. I'll give you one example. Run on the field, run off the field. It's a good thought, you know. I understand the point. The point is to teach a kid, like, hey, listen, care about the little things, you know, make an effort to get out there and show respect to the people that are watching you here, you know, and that's true and all, but those are things that you teach a young child who's going to become an adult. I feel like in the game of professional sports, you know, kind of similar to like a glove touch. You've seen those boxers and those MMA fighters that get knocked out seconds after they touch the gloves. It's like, you touch gloves in the locker room, pal. There's no reason to be out here touching gloves. And, you know, honestly, the physicality that's involved in hockey might be where this line gets a little bit blurred, because, you know, you could say the same thing for a team that's beating up on another team. We're
baseball. This doesn't happen in baseball, though. Like, you got to get the runs. Like, if you can run it up, you can run it up.
Oh, for sure. And I'm talking specifically not scoring here, but like, let's just say the Brendan Smith, Connor Bedard thing. Blackhawks come into town. Devils are going to the playoffs, but the Blackhawks kind of want to get even because they just lost their star player. This is all hypothetical, by the way. And they just come in and they start ragdolling. And you're the Devils. You're thinking, I'm not going to even put my starters out there right now. Hughes got injured in the last game. You know, we could be in a tough spot if this team just wants to play Crash Bandicoot the whole time. So my whole thing is, like, there is some camaraderie and there is some level of, you know, sportsmanship that has to happen. But where's the distinction between, you know, running the score up and continuing to play a game that's not sportsmanlike? So I do understand the point, but I do feel like if it's 10-1 and the bases are loaded and you get a good pitch.
And that guy needed that. What if that guy needed that touchdown? You know, like, it's somebody that came from another team, hasn't had 17 touchdowns the previous year, and then comes and has none the whole final season game. Like,
well, it reminds me of the Giannis thing where he chases down the guy who stole the ball only to find out that one of the players in that game scored their first point, and they always take the game ball. And it was just a matter of miscommunication and tempers flaring in the moment. If you remember that, that was, you know, a huge moment for Giannis. He scored
65. I think it was 65.
And it's like, you know, obviously we have different expectations when we go out there, and one team was expecting one thing to happen. It didn't happen. And yeah, huge moment for the guy who scores. What if it was a financial incentive, right? We saw a few people in the last game of the year hit their bonuses for sacks or for yardage. And, you know, that's also a huge thing that goes into play. Like, don't step between me and my money, dude, because I feel like that's a huge motivating factor, even when you're
and the best part about that is Arthur Smith, the Falcons coach who had a problem with it, canned. Monday, canned.
It's a trend right now in the NFL. There's already a few heads that have rolled.
There's a lot. Heads are spinning. But bringing it back to hockey, like, it's always a fun time when the NFL regular season ends, because I know me as a NFL watching fan, it's all in on, like, hockey season. So I know there's a lot of, especially New Yorkers, you know, we're a Rangers focused podcast. So, you know, New York Football Giants and the Jets kind of suck this year. So it's going to be all in on the Rangers this year, baby.
As a Jets fan, having the season end in January is not something you're,
I think 12 years straight.
Do the Jets not remind you a little bit of the Rangers in some aspects, though, as far as drafting? You know, you draft a second overall guy. This is how many times trying to fill that same position.
We go the big free agent route. Like, we get them to come to New York. You're going to change the franchise around. Yeah.
We're lucky that, you know, you've had a few cracks at it. So have the Rangers. But I thought about it the other day, man. We've squandered now Elias Anderson, you know, Vitali Kravtsov, right? And now this is a huge pressure cooker now for Laf and Kakko, because, you know, 10 years from now, you're going to look back and say, how many opportunities did the Jets, how many opportunities did the Rangers have to fill that with someone who was worth a damn?
And it's all a game of luck, you know. Someday you get the draft card. It doesn't matter what sport, NBA, NFL, NHL, you get the draft card. The guy's supposed to be good. And then he comes and shows up, and he, under the big lights, he's scared and doesn't deliver. And, you know, he just gets buried and falls to the media. We see it all the time with sports people. So,
you know, a Twitter user posted something the other day it was a bit that they were doing. They weren't serious, but they were talking about comparing Will Cooley to Jerome Iginla, and they were getting a lot of crap for it, obviously. And I thought about it, you know, how much we put into these athletes we put them as, you know, what they were drafted as, essentially. And we a lot of the times disregard the second, third, fourth round players as people who will have a worthwhile career. And we really just focus at that top. And it's crazy that in 2024, drafting isn't down to the science. There are still teams that find these great value picks all throughout the draft. And then you have guys like Nikita Kucherov, who was drafted two slots in front of Will Cooley. And over their first season, Cooley has 6 goals. Kucherov only had 9.
And besides being a hitting machine, leading the NHL rookies in hits. But it's also, I feel like for being a person in the later first round or early second round, it's such an easier path to stardom because, you know, you're not expected to be like turn a garbage franchise around.
Am I saying that these two players are going to be, you know, Cooley's going to be scoring 100 points? It's a long shot, but I wouldn't count it out when we talk about how much talent is on this team. Obviously, I don't think that that's what's going to happen, but it does go to show you that you never know with these top guys, and who knows if it's just a matter of wanting it more. I think Cooley shocked a lot of people and turned a lot of heads when he made this team out of camp. And if you approach the game with that mindset, I mean, sky's the limit as far as his potential. And as you alluded to, we haven't seen anybody really hit out the gate like such a hitting monster like Cooley. I mean, is it impossible to say that he turns out to be like a Tom Wilson, where he's a scoring threat and is just a physical menace?
It's all about the work ethic. Who would know that Will Cooley would have more work ethic than Vitali Kravtsov? And
well, if I said what I wanted to say, I'd be, all right, buddy. Well, we got game time.
I got a 3-2 win tonight. Rangers win it.
Well, my parlays hope that I'm right, but talk to you soon, brother.
It's only bragging rights now. For now, Steve, let's go Rangers.
Let's go Rangers, man.